Welcome back to the Group Answers Podcast, episode 53. I'm Brian Daniel, and as always, here with Chris Surratt.
What's up?
Chris, we're in the throes of winter.
Yeah, it's been a little cold and snowy in the Nashville South. I think like a couple days ago, it was a high of like 8 degrees, the wind chill factor of like -5, which people in Minnesota are laughing at us, but it was cold.
Even Minnesotans don't laugh too hard at 5 degrees. And it's not the cold, it's the cold slash dark that's the problem this time of year.
That's true, although it is getting lighter every single day. And we always put on our chalkboard in January, spring will come, it always does. And so just think those thoughts, warm thoughts.
It helps. And Chris, we are joined here today with Todd Atkins.
Speaking of warming up the room.
Yep. Todd, welcome to the show.
Oh, why, thank you.
Nice. Thank you. Nice segue there.
Great segue, I might add.
Welcome to the show, Todd Atkins.
Hey, man, I'm glad to be here.
Todd, for you, those of you that don't know, that don't follow Todd on Twitter, he is the director of our leadership area at Lifeway Christian Resources. A little bit about Lifeway Leadership, if you don't know. Lifeway Leadership is responsible for Ministry Grid, which is a very comprehensive online training program. You can find out more at ministrygrid.com. The Pipeline event, which we will talk about in a few minutes, which we're excited about, everyone here. I've gone to that every year that you've had it, and that is it is great, Todd. You guys have done a great job with that. The New Churches podcast, which is new, right?
It's about a year and a half old.
Not so new.
That's with me, Daniel M.
Yes.
Our Canadian friend.
He's a friend of the show, right, Chris?
Yeah.
He is a friend of the show. He's been on twice. Todd, this is your first time.
It's my first time. It's our first dance together.
Our first dance. And leadership coaching, which is...
Leadership pipeline coaching, yeah. We did that like this year alone, in the last year, over 2,600 church leaders, stateside and other places. We did a stint in Australia for a little bit, but it's been awesome. So that is like in-person, live, usually multi-day event.
So 2,600 pastors have been through your coaching?
Yep.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
We were on the road a lot.
Wow.
Yet I'm still having, or my wife is having a child in like 6 weeks, guys. It's coming.
Wow.
It's upon us. I'm not a young man anymore.
None of us are. Todd is also the co-host.
At least in this room.
That's right. He's also the co-host of the very popular 5 Leadership Questions. Also served several years in various pastoral roles before coming to Lifeway. One of those at McLean Bible, which is where my daughter was attending before she moved out to San Diego, right?
I think that's where church. I first got to know you is when you were at McLean. I was at Seacoast.
Right.
Yep.
And
this is like 2005.
Uh-huh.
So 2005, gosh, that's 12 years ago.
Yes, and they add up. Don't
Again,
they?
We're old. Yeah.
We are old. And we were talking about
Today's
multi-site.
Theme.
So it was a really fun time. I mean, it was a fun time for all of us, I'm sure, in ministry. And multi-site was still newer.
Yeah, that's when we were doing the Leadership Network.
Yeah.
Communities on multi-site. And us and you guys and Community Christian and Life Church and...
Yeah, it was a good group. It was, and you know, like you had North Point, Saddleback, Northland. Yep. It was a good mix. And the beautiful thing about that, that's the only cohort I think I've ever been in that was like everybody was just cool with everybody. Like nobody was trying to impress each other. That's what made it great. We all just shared ideas and what was working, what wasn't. And that's one of my favorite cohort experiences for sure.
It was.
And as if those credentials weren't enough, in addition to his Master's of Divinity at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, he has an MA in leadership, so he's in a good place. So welcome to the show, Todd. I wanted to start off with just, you know, I think this is a question that you would expect, but in the world of church leadership, which is not, you know, not the macro writ large world. Who do you find yourself admiring the most in that? Maybe not the most, but maybe the, you know, you guys have the podcast, the 5 Leadership Questions. Who comes to mind, I think, most easily in that context?
Well, I mean, you know, I can go I could go at the macro level and say, you know, we have guests on that appear on, you know, more than one time. A couple have been on like three times. Craig Rochelle would be one of those guys that just from a practical, applicable leadership perspective, always throws down, always delivers. You know, there's a lot of different people that we would say we learn from. Honestly, I'm tending to learn a lot more from the business sector these days and then how to apply that to church. And I almost feel like a middleman with that. Eric Geiger is a co-host on the podcast as well as Daniel M. And so, I mean, I most people would consider me like a voracious reader, but Geiger's on the next level. So, you know, we had a meeting earlier today where he said something about two or three books a week, and that's no joke.
Yeah, I gave up at that point. I said, I'm no longer going to read.
I'm two or three a month. And, you know, last month, because it was Christmas, I got a lot more in. But, you know, the thing is, I think what we're ended up serving as is almost a go-between between, you know, some of the really what's coming through in a business practice standpoint and saying, okay, here's how we can apply that to the church. So you can find guests like Simon Sinek on our podcast, who's, you know, not a believer, but has plenty to say about the world and how it works and what we need to be looking for. The interesting thing there, I learned more from the podcast. Not I learned more. I had more of a visceral reaction, a more of a spiritual moment with a podcast with him than any sermon I heard in the last year. And that was, we're talking about who he's learning from, and he started talking about games theory and infinite and finite games.
I love that stuff.
So it was a finite game is, you know, the last football game you watched. It has rules. It has a set time limit, and there's a winner and a loser.
A playing field.
Yeah. An infinite game, there it goes on forever. And so he talked about different people or different businesses that are playing a finite game versus an infinite game. So Walmart and Amazon. Walmart couldn't figure out what was going on for years, for a decade. Nobody could. They looked at Amazon. Amazon was playing an infinite game. They were not playing to win or lose. They were playing to get better and better and better and better. And so he gave examples of Compaq and Apple and all these different competitors. But the thing that I walked away with was this. As Christians, certainly as church leaders and pastors, we should recognize that we are in an infinite game. And it because we're infinite beings. Mm. And for me personally, it was how many times do I go to bed at night feeling like I lost that day versus playing to get better and making sure that the next day, you know, I'm better, making sure that, you know, I'm keeping close and that there's not a day that goes by that I don't, you know, that I'm not repenting of something, you know, in my life and in my heart. Because in my experience, when I don't have that regular cadence is when I can get callous, is when I can start to lose my way. So that was the greatest spiritual moment of my life. And it wasn't, at least for the last year. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't one of our guests that you might think.
So you're saying we should pay attention to the business world as much or more than the church world.
Well, I'm saying that, at least for me, what's having the greatest impact on me are those types of things, which I'm then hopefully bringing back in and contextualizing in a church setting and making sure that, you know, all wisdom is from above. Mm-hmm. So it's just saying, okay, what do I apply? How do I apply that? The other people that are really my heroes are, you know, my family that are bivocational and serving out in the church. It's the people that I look back on that made me who I am that, you know, most of them weren't paid staff at a church. They were just somebody who cared enough about me to invest in me, to walk me through a process and ask me some questions. And a lot of times that was in a group setting, at least early on.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I would say, though, I mean, wouldn't you agree that in group leadership and in groups practice, the idea that paradigm shift from finite game to infinite game has application?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the small group kind of concept, you're looking at the long term. You're looking at a game that's always moving, that our journey of being discipled is always going forward, you know. And so I think it applies definitely. And I want to ask you to that, Todd, when it comes to developing leaders, and especially small group leaders, because that's who our audience is, why right. is it important, and the emphasis is on develop, right. why is it important to develop small group leaders? Because I think a lot of times we think we can just give them curriculum,
right.
give them some people, and then that's really all they need. So why is it important to develop them?
Well, I mean, I think one of the most dangerous things that's coming down the pike in the last 30 years in church practice is the idea that to be a small group leader, all you have to do is press play and walk through some questions. Because, I mean, you know, basically when you, over the course of time, as churches in the last 100 years especially have gotten larger and larger, we know from a sociological research perspective how people group together and how people find community and how they find it best and how what makes them grow. And so I feel like it's vitally important. I'll often say, hey, if you want to judge the health of a church, the spiritual temperature of a church, it's based on its average attendee. And so I would say, you know, if you want to go a step, you know, beyond that, it would be look at its groups. However you define, you know, those groups, I would say look at your small groups ministry and look at the average person in your small groups ministry who is, you know, one step, you know, further in connected and hopefully sticking at your church for a longer term, and they likely will, you know, because they're in a group. What is that person? Who are they now? Who are they becoming? And looking at that year over year. One of the most effective things that we did sounds really businesslike, but it was every 2 years we did a survey. It was a complete blind survey. The staff didn't even know when we would do it, but we were gauging the spiritual health of our church. And we would take a deep dive specifically on our groups because we were like, well, okay, this is where the spiritual maturity level of our people in our groups, this is the spiritual maturity of them, of our leaders. You know, and you know, you start to see, you can't say causation always, but you can start to see strong correlation between spiritual maturity and people in groups. Spiritual maturity, the length of time that somebody's in a group and the likelihood that they'll serve. The groups that just seem to be incubators for leaders versus there's not, you know, any coming out of this one, that one, the other. So, you know, we, over the course of time, of course, we made adjustments to how we did groups, and we tried closed groups and open groups and, you know, all different kinds of things along the way. But at the end of the day, it all comes back down to the group leader. That group leader is in control of that experience. That group leader is the first in line most of the time to minister to that person or that family. And so it's vitally important that we get that person as developed as possible. And furthermore, the vast majority of what goes on in churches and is called training of small group leaders is onboarding. It's onboarding. Mm-hmm. It's not development. You basically are onboarding them to your ministry, wiping your hands, and then, you know, once a year we're going to have an event. Mm-hmm. That is not leadership development.
That's why I said the emphasis is on development.
Right.
Because I think, yeah, you're right. We train them at the top and we say, okay, here's the keys. But
right.
then we don't really tell them how to navigate the curves that they're going to hit along the way and
right.
then move on up through the...
So one of the mantras we would have in Leadership Pipeline is tour guides, not travel agents. I don't want to... A transfer of information is not transformation. You know, using your analogy of a person who knows the curves, you think of... A lot of times we end up giving somebody, you know, some oars and saying, hey, at the bottom of this trail, there's a raft and we'll pick you up down here, you know, on the other side. Where the reality is you really need somebody to go with you who knows the terrain. They know the journey. And they know what the river is like at this stage. And, oh, you know, when the river is at this stage, this is double suck. So it's going to spin us one way. And then when we come through, we need to paddle to the right and we'll be okay. We'll be fine. But the idea is to make sure that you not only have one person that does that, but to somehow systematize that shepherding mentality. So I think what I think a lot of people struggle with when they first look at our pipeline stuff, they're like, Todd, you're all business. You're all systems and process. And I'm like, yeah, because if, you know, we're called to be shepherds and stewards. I just happen to wear my stewardship hat quite a bit, but recognize that if we don't have clarity, if we don't have some simplicity, if we don't think this through, then very likely we're going to lose some people along the way, or it's going to be so complicated. It may be, appear simple to us because we've been here for a long time or we're the person that built it, but it's not simple to our people and they don't know what their next step is in development. And it's not replicable. Mm-hmm. So our goal would be to say, hey, everybody's a tour guide. Like if you're in leadership, it's not my job as a staff person to identify, recruit, and develop other small group leaders. It's your job as a small group leader. It's the democratization of leadership development. It's not just for a few.
It's the trellis and the vine, if you will. So in terms of leadership, I think everyone in this room and probably a lot of people listening are readers. I mean, maybe not as voracious as Eric, and I've heard Dr. Al Mohler is even beyond that.
Yeah.
So I started reading like leadership kind of what people call business books several years ago. And now I'm to the point to where I've seen a little bit of a trend.
Right.
And it seems like they went from like a nuts and bolts, very hands-on to almost a narrative approach.
Right.
To now these days, there's like this integration almost of the two. So when you read these kinds of books, there's storytelling along with like very practical application. How, in your experience, how have you seen leadership development in the church change through the years?
That's a big question.
A lot of words.
Well, you are right in the sense that you see things come back in cycles. So I'm waiting for, you know, us to start talking about the holiness of God again being a big thing. Like you just, if you're around a while, you see some things come back again and again and again. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that's bad.
No.
It's not bad at all. In fact, it's a fresh perspective on an established.
Absolutely. Right. Or it's a pendulum swing. So, mm-hmm. you know,
or right.
I would say 30 years ago, the pendulum swung in the church growth movement massively. If you want to go back 40, 50 years ago, we have things like church membership. So, you know, somebody did some research and said, hey, if a person's a church member, then they give more, they pray more, they're more spiritually, you know, mature, all this stuff. So the solution that everybody started to apply was, well, I just need to get more people as a church member. Well, that kind of so for the next two decades, church membership was vitally important and people took way down the barriers to church membership. So it was like walking down an aisle and signing a card.
Or getting rid of it altogether.
That was the pendulum that swung back. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, McLean, we had maybe 1,300 members. Like we had way less than 10% of the people that on an average Sunday would come through our doors were members. Because we'd swung the pendulum the other way. And it was like, you had to meet with an elder. I mean, I came in, you know, as ministry staff with 8 years of experience in the church and, you know, all these degrees and all that. And they still interviewed me for membership. And I'm like, I'm a pastor here. What do you do? So you have those pendulum swings. And I would say one of the biggest things that we suffer from is a lot of the mainline denominations, and Baptists included, owe a lot to scope and sequence, owe a lot to an approach where we're walking people through a doctrine or, you know, the liturgy and all these different things. I don't care what denomination we're talking about here, but, you know, Baptists in particular, yeah, we're people of the book and we're people of missions, but we're also people of scope and sequence. So you had things like training union mm-hmm. in the past that was, you know, a dedicated time on a Sunday night where you're really walking through the basics of discipleship and development. And those days are gone, you know, and they're not coming back again. And I'm not necessarily trying to bring them back again. I am trying to bring back that content in a different context and make sure we say, hey, what's really important? We shifted from a map to a menu. We shifted from, I'm going to walk you through this set curriculum, this set doctrine to choose your own adventure, do whatever's right in your own mind. And I think we lost something in that because we also, research shows, you know, we used to get those people three times a week. Now we get them 3 times a month, mm-hmm. if we're lucky. And so all those shifts mean we have to be so precise. We have to not waste a single moment of someone's time these days, because that is a cardinal sin. And if you waste a person's time, they're not coming back to your next training, or they're not signing up again next year.
Let me ask you about that specifically when it comes to practically training people. It seems like it's, like you said, the pendulum has swung back and forth. And I remember years ago when I was at Seacoast, we first started kind of experimenting with online training. We kind of built our own thing through, was it Noodle? Was that the platform back then? So we built it, and this was going to be the way of the future.
Right.
And I think, you know, back then the technology wasn't there. And so streaming wasn't around.
Right.
Showing videos was really tough over the internet. So it didn't really work. And then so, we swung back to kind of the classroom style of training. And then now with Ministry Grid specifically, it's online. It's mostly online. So in your opinion, what is the best method for training a leader? If you're thinking about a small group leader, okay, we get it now. We have to develop them.
Right.
What's the best way to do that?
Well, I would say if you want to see transformation happen in anybody's life, whether it's spiritual or, you know, the development of a leader, that usually occurs in the context of a relationship. And it usually involves an overlap of 3 things, knowledge, experience, and coaching. So where we typically get it wrong in the education space is think about your college degree. The knowledge piece was, we have to read these books and take these tests and display knowledge. And it was also based on time. So it was just an overlap of 2 things. Even your credit hours are measured in, you know, they're measured in time. It's measured in hours. So the problem with that is we all know plenty of people who've had the training or education and they've done the time, but they don't have competency. They don't have mastery. So if you want to see competency, mastery, if you want to see transformation in someone's life in a given area, then it's an overlap of knowledge, experience, and coaching. So yes, do your training, but also make sure that you're giving that person an experience. If you can't give them an experience, at least give them a case study, or at least give them a situation to walk through and process with them. And that's the last piece. The process piece is that conversation. So, you know, it sounds really weird for a guy who, you know, has spent the last 4 years developing software to be this passionate about development and leadership and, you know, relationships. But at the end of the day, that's what it is. All I'm trying to do is give people the tools to make that happen better. Because if you look at my background and my history, I mean, you know, I'm from the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, and there were good and godly people, but they couldn't have probably asked me a good coaching question. But somebody, probably from Lifeway many moons ago, wrote some curriculum or wrote something that people walked me through. They were good and godly people, perfectly capable of having the conversation. But if left to their own devices, it would have been, so tell me about what God's been telling you recently. How are you treating your wife? Is your family okay? Rather than, I'm going to make sure that you are growing in your competency and mastery in discipleship, in developing others, in stewardship, and all these different areas. So if you look at what we've done on the Lifeway leadership side and the Grid side, it's all underneath that is a philosophy and a framework that, you know, we would call pipeline. We'd say, hey, every church needs a pipeline. They need universal core competencies. A person who's leading 8 to 10 people, whether it's a small group or ushers, needs to know how to handle conflict. So what's that look like? What does competency look like in that? But likewise, every person needs a pathway. Every person, the small group leader needs a different training pathway than the head usher. So let's give them a specific training pathway for their ministry. So all of it is scope and sequence on steroids, which may sound really complicated, but we worked really, really hard to make it simple for you to take advantage of. So not to push that too hard, but just to give you an example, I'm not just talking about it. I've spent years developing the curriculum and years, you know, putting it into a format where somebody can use it. One more thing. Sorry. I know I'm talking too much.
Hey, this isn't 5 leadership questions. I mean,
you're hosting.
We do try to keep this I'm just kidding.
It's like eight group questions.
No, but so, you know, recognizing where people are, over 400,000 people used Grid last year, and 67% of them were on a mobile device. So we know that that's where we have to shift to. Mm-hmm. So my goal is to, I'm still want to feed you a steak, but I'm going to cut it up for you and give it to you one bite at a time in a medium that you're used to. Then we'll process it.
It sounds like what you're saying is the way it works best is the high tech, high touch.
Absolutely.
Where you've got the tech part that brings in the expertise. I mean, I always talk to small group leaders about using DVD-based curriculum because that takes the teaching piece off.
Right.
They don't have to worry about that. So you're bringing the teaching piece, but they still have to shepherd their group. Pastors still have to shepherd their leaders through right. the process. But you take off that load that they don't need to tackle anyway.
Right.
Which is that teaching core part.
Well, because it's impossible, especially, you know, depending on the size of the church, it's impossible to have the knowledge and expertise to be able to train everybody in all positions. So mm-hmm. why not get that extra voice? And why not you provide the contextualization? Why don't you provide the modeling? Why don't you provide the what this means to us and our values? So hopefully your church does have, you know, the values clearly defined, and you can kind of point back to those and celebrate those as you're walking through what we just learned and how we're training.
Todd, the pipeline strategy to me feels fresh, but I look at it and it's like, why hasn't anybody done this before? I mean, this is something that you guys developed?
No. Well, Leadership Pipeline is actually written by a guy named Ram Charan, which is a business book. You also have, I would be heavily influenced by a guy named Noel Tichy, if you're familiar with Jack Welch and GE. Everybody, you know, gives claps and kudos to Jack Welch, but the reality is there was a guy named Noel Tichy mm-hmm. that ran all their leadership development stuff. And so that's where you find, so the basic framework comes from, would come from Leadership Pipeline. The idea of there's multiple levels and there's shifts that have to take place between levels, that's Charan. But the rest is about the church. The rest was developed from church leaders who I said, hey, volunteer, leader, coach, ministry director, and senior leader in a church, what do you think that person needs to lead well? And so, you know, it was Brad Lominick and Mac Lake and Will Mancini, yes, but it was a lot of church practitioners as well who weighed into that. And we took all that information and created, you know, the core competencies at each level.
And for those of you that don't know, the pipeline levels, and I don't know if it's limited to this or not, are leadership responsibilities, sample roles, discipleship, vision, strategy, collaboration, right. people development, stewardship, and ministry-specific competencies. It's a very comprehensive and very manageable, which is what makes it unique, approach right. to leadership and developing leaders in those four roles that you've already identified.
What I love about the way it's laid out here is sometimes when we think about the pipeline, we think about a pipeline that goes up.
Right.
And you're supposed to start from the bottom and get all the way to the top.
Right.
And that's not really the idea of a pipeline, is it?
No. I mean, and that's where, you know, Noel Tichy would be a heavy influencer. Noel Tichy said, every organization is truly a knowledge-based organization, and every organization rises and falls on leadership. That I know John Maxwell said that too, but you got to go back to Tichy, yeah, I think. Yeah. So the interesting thing there is when you look at that, he would say your number one job as a leader in an organization, this is a secular person, is saying your number one job is to reproduce yourself. Your number one job is to teach others to do what you do. And so thinking about that, when you marry that with a pipeline concept, when you marry that with a church, you say, oh, we're not just supposed to be disciples. We're supposed to make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. And it's not, you know, all have been called, all have been sent. We're all called to develop other people. So there's, you know, there are some unique differences between discipleship and development. But at the same time, there's a lot that tie those things together. Michael Kelly was on our podcast the other day, and I said, tell me the stories from scripture that you would use to talk about discipleship. So he rattles through and, you know, and I'm like, those are the exact same ones that everybody talks about with development. So why are they different? So, you know, we can split hairs sometimes about what this is and what this looks like. It doesn't have to be overly complicated. We just have to have a clear direction and understand where we're going and where we're taking people. Otherwise, it will be choose your own adventure, and the person is going to be on a cruise to nowhere and end up right back where they started.
Very cool. And you mentioned and kind of teased a little bit about it, there's obviously all kinds of leadership training on the grid, but you specifically have training for small group leaders, right?
Right.
So how and I think you're going to run a special for it, right? When this comes out?
It's free, actually.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
Tell us how to get there.
Well, what we'll do is we'll put a link in your show notes. How about that? So if you go to the show notes, then you'll have a link that'll take you straight into the new grid, and you'll have a training pathway right there that you'll just kind of walk through. There's three levels to everything we do. There's you might think of it as learner leader multiplier. So if somebody's a volunteer, their first process is learning it. The next is becoming competent and leading in it. And then the next is reproducing themselves or multiplying themselves. Your success is not progression all the way up the pipeline, as you said. Success is becoming who God's created you to be and multiplying yourself there. We're not all going to be pastors. We're not going to be campus pastors. If we apply this well, a guy might move up from being a small group leader to your campus pastor. And that would be awesome. We have a route for that. But the reality is, if we want to scale and grow our churches, if we want to impact our community, it's going to be done through people. And the best way to do that is by helping people understand from a cultural perspective, I'm supposed to multiply myself.
That's awesome. If you haven't checked out the new ministry grid, you need to, even if you've looked at it before. I've messed around with it a lot over the last few weeks. And if you've used anything like Asana or any kind of those checklists, software that's popular now, it looks just like it.
Yeah.
So if somebody does something business-wise with a to-do list online, they're going to understand it right away.
Totally. It's like in a checklist format. Because of whether you're 18 or 80, you understand a checklist. And so, our reset of ministry grid meant we wanted to make sure we addressed the issue of people coming in and, hey, do I know where I'm going? Well, you should, because it's a checklist that you can walk through. So we made it as simple as possible.
That's going to wrap it up for episode 53. Todd Atkins, Director of Lifeway Leadership. Todd, thank you so much for being with us. There's a lot of years that are rolled up into those responses and what you've learned. If you want to follow Todd, you can do that on Twitter at Todd Atkins. That's TODDADKINS. And that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks to Chris Surratt for being our, in addition to co-host, the producer, engineer, and director of this show. And thanks to our sponsor, smallgroup.com. Chris, you can tell us a little bit more about smallgroup.com.
Smallgroup.com is a great tool. We talk about it on every podcast. But just like Ministry Grid has a new version, smallgroup.com has a brand new version that you can actually check out as of today. If you log in for a free 30-day trial, you can see it's a brand new, built from the bottom up experience at smallgroup.com. And it has a new module for managing your groups. So Todd talked about that scope and sequence and giving people a map. You can now do that through smallgroup.com. You just put all your group leaders in there, you set them up, you assign studies or let them pick their own studies, build a map for the year, and you're able to do all that in the new smallgroup.com. So check it out.
I'm Brian Daniel on behalf of Chris Surratt and Todd Atkins. Until next time.